I'm 35.
Okay, so I got a ways to wait.
I'm 35 twice almost. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. And the restrooms are across the foyer up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll read the AA preamble, which states, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So normally, the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. We typically have a panel of two speakers, and a home group member will chair the meeting, and we will do basically experience, strength, and hope. On, for instance, next week, we'll start over with step one, step two, step three, et cetera. And then when we go through all the 12 steps, we have a supper and a speaker about every 14 weeks, and that's where we are tonight. So we'll hopefully have another one in about 14 weeks, but come back on Monday. We'll be talking about step one next week as well. So also want to really thank everyone who showed up tonight. If you brought something, if you brought a smile, the home group members who pulled together to make this happen, I really just thank you. So this evening we're going to have a speaker, and we have a gentleman who's come down all the way from Falls Church, Virginia. He's driven all the way down here to tell you his story, and I think you're in for a treat. I'd like to introduce Mike T.
Hi, I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic. Is that good volume? Yeah. All right. Thank you all for having me out here. Thank you. I know very few of you, so I'm a little more nervous than I normally would be, but that's all right. It's an honor and a privilege anytime Alcoholics Anonymous asked me to do anything. It gave me my life, changed my life, and it gives me a way to deal with the life that I now have with grace and dignity, for the most part. My debt will never be paid to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know that, and I'm very grateful. Every time I talk, any time at an AA meeting, I always start with reading something out of the big book, because at the very least, you'll hear a message coming from my mouth by me reading out of the big book, because I really don't know what I'm going to say. So I'm going to start with that, and it helps me to get centered on what my purpose is. So I'm going to read out of the appendix, which I got to find now because I have to go. It should be all the way in the back, right? All right, I'm going to read an appendix to the spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals, happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, and such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experience are what the psychologist William James called the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months, could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think that this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or a belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation, by Herbert Spencer. So I am an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am actively sponsored. I have the honor and privilege of sponsoring amazing men who have saved my life on many occasions. My sponsor is one of the most wonderful men and most kind and patient and loving men I have ever known in my life, and I don't know where I would be without him. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And it says in a general way, but I have an hour, so maybe a little more specific. I'm going to move this down because it's all right. I'll tell you really quickly a brief overview of what I'm like now. Outside of the fact that I am missing some hair that I will probably never get back, I am genuinely happy. I am genuinely peaceful. I can go anywhere free men can go. I have had many spiritual awakenings. My life is a spiritual experience. I have gifts that are of family, of friendship, stuff that I could never have imagined for the type of person that I was, the selfish, awful taker. I have been given by Alcoholics Anonymous the ability to give, the ability to love unconditionally, and the ability to have some grace and dignity and to show up for life. It's magic, honestly, in a lot of ways, because I don't really fully understand how I got here, how I ended up here, but I'm super grateful that I've had the opportunity and that I didn't die along the way, because I should have died, and I just don't know. So I had a spiritual awakening recently, like 6 months ago. It was January. It was the first week of January. And, you know, life doesn't stop happening because I got sober. Life doesn't treat me special because I got sober. I am entitled to nothing other than to be treated equally by people in general, right? But I'm not entitled to really anything. And some stuff happened in this last year that shook me. And I didn't really understand, because I had been doing Alcoholics Anonymous with great vigor, and I have for years now. And I had been, I married this girl, and I loved her super well, and all this stuff, and. I'll say a couple things before I get into this. I will try not to curse or swear or whatever you want to call it. I speak in slang sometimes, and I'll try to be respectful. The other thing is, I am going to tell my story as it relates to my alcoholism. My alcoholism does include drug use. I'm not going to get specific about that, but just understand that it's all the same to me. It all does the same thing. It hits the same spots. And it really isn't about the substance at all. So I went through this, like, I'll get to that when I tell my story, but I'll tell you this briefly. I had a spiritual awakening where I was so distraught, and I had just come back from, I went to Costa Rica, I went to Colorado, and I was like really working on it. I was sleeping around, all this stuff. I was going through a divorce, and I was like doing all kinds of crazy stuff to try to fix me because, you know, God forbid I actually turn to God immediately and go hell after all that I've learned. And I'm doing all these actions, and I'm feeling worse and worse and worse, and I'm trying to take vacations, and I've been gifted with the opportunity to travel and all this stuff through AA, which is awesome, and I'm not complaining about that at all. But I was looking at all these things to make me okay, to make me feel better, seeking in women to make me feel lovable again, all this stuff, and none of it was working. And I'm driving over to this girl's house at like 11 o'clock at night for whatever reason, as people do. And hey, this is just my story. And I went into a fit of crying that was unbelievable. Like, I couldn't drive, I had to pull over, and I was shaking and just broken, like really broken, because it all just hit, and I couldn't really fully comprehend what was happening. I called my sponsor, and fortunately he answered the phone, and he like talked me through the craziness that was going on at that moment. And what had happened at that moment was that it all started to melt away, and I started to see the truth of things that I've always been told, and my sponsor's been telling me since this all began, is like, this is not going to work. This is not going to fix you. You are going to break. And I'm like, no, I'm good. I got this. I'm like, you know, I'm okay. And I was hurting people. I was hurting myself. And that moment was one of these spectacular people's where, like, light and all this stuff, and I did not go over to that girl's house. I went home, and I was like, all right, now it's time to change, right? It's time to actually get back into the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I was supposed to be living in all my affairs, which it told me in step 12, which is super important, because not some of my affairs. My grand sponsor says, if you can't practice the principles in all of your affairs, change your affairs. Like, it's that simple. So since that moment, I've come back to God, a God that was a very big struggle for me to even get in contact with in the first place, but is everything. I mean, that's my choice. God is everything. And I came back into that place, and I started to take actions that were of the man that I wanted to, that I'm supposed to be, that I want to be, not this frightened, defective person that I allowed some trauma or somebody else's actions or whatever it may be turn me into. And when I can invite God back into my life, when I'm going through that stuff, you know, my grand sponsor once sat me down, and he was like, I believe everyone wants to be, God wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. And I said, well, what makes you so special? What about all the people in the world that are suffering? Why should you be happy, joyous, and free? That's bullshit. And he was like, okay. And what I come to find is that Alcoholics Anonymous gives me an ability through the steps and through principle and through grace to be happy, joyous, and free no matter what is going on around me. No matter what situation I find myself in. No matter who has died. No matter what wife has cheated on me. No matter what any of this is. To find a way to be happy, joyous, and free. To be in the warm, loving embrace of a God of my understanding no matter what. It's an amazing thing. So I'll start at the beginning a little bit. I'm from New Jersey. It's a terrible place to be from. It's literally the worst, maybe besides Ohio. Not with pride, but I was from there. Right outside of New York City, I'm from a working class family. I had a pretty happy childhood, I've come to find out. I was sort of a nerdy, sort of portly, super religious kid that wanted to be a priest. So that wasn't super awesome with kids in elementary school and middle school. They weren't really into all that. I read a lot. I talked about Jesus a lot. Nobody really wants to hear that, for the most part. That was like my first face of God, right, that I've ever seen. It was my dad, really. My dad was my first face of God. He was this all-powerful being and whatever. And then this priest that kind of took me under his wing became a face of God. And somewhere in all that stuff, things shifted very drastically due to stuff that I'm not going to get into. So when I was about 13 years old, and I came to a point where I rejected the idea of God completely. I was reading books that were mind-expanding in nature. I started to become curious of stuff. My father sort of raised me on some music that was, we'll just call it Grateful Dead-related stuff. So at the age of 13, I was sort of an outcast kid, very alone, lost this God that I had, lost this whole idea of what I wanted to be, and I was like, I am going to reinvent myself, and when I go to high school, I'm going to a different school. So I begged my parents to send me to this all-boys college prep school so I could redo myself, basically reinvent myself. Right before I went to that school, my father, me and my sister, it was in 1991, they took me to my first Grateful Dead show, and at that show, some magic stuff happened. Well, in a nutshell, I had my very first real spiritual awakening because of the way I saw myself and the way that I saw the world. When I got there and I got into this parking lot and I was having this experience with my father and my sister that was... you know, had adulterants in it. It was the first time I ever got drunk. And it shifted me. Completely shifted the way I saw the world. And I, at that moment, I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And there was no gradual descent into alcoholism. This was like, this is it. This is the answer for me. This is what I'm going to do with my life. Let me figure this out. And I proceeded to rebrand myself. I was like hippie deadhead kid that went to this all-boys college prep school. I met the right people. I got involved in a burgeoning business, and I had a run that was incredible, to be honest with you. And that shift, honestly, that spiritual awakening at that moment saved my life, because honestly, at that time, the reason I was trying to rebrand myself, I wanted to die. There was some stuff that had happened that I couldn't handle and deal with. And I didn't want to live in this world anymore. And I was afraid of everybody and everything. I didn't trust anybody or anything. And that moment saved me. And I'm grateful for it. It didn't ruin me. I was going to find alcohol. That was just where I found it. And I chased that real hard for some years. I managed to get through high school. I managed to get into college, and I told my parents that I was going to go to a college, and they threw a graduation party. And I have all these, I'm half Arabic, half, I'm half Palestinian, half Italian. And I have these relatives that are really big into parties and giving money for like celebratory events. And I had a graduation party and they gave me all this money. And I was supposed to take this money and use it for college. I took this money and I split. And I left home and I went and followed this band around. This was 1994. And they were not happy with that decision, as they wouldn't be. During all this time, my relationships with all my family just devolved into just mayhem. They could. My father had, like, this is probably not the correct way to tough love somebody, but he was like, I don't love you anymore. I can't love you anymore. Stuff like that. Like, he couldn't handle who I had become. And as soon as I was able to leave, really, I just left. And I didn't go home for a long time. And I didn't talk to them for a long time. And I went and did this thing, and it really worked out for some years. It worked out until really 1998. If you haven't guessed yet, I'm 41. I'm old or something. In my community, I go to young people's AA in Northern Virginia, and they call me old, and I'm like, come on, man. I'm not old. I'm just losing my hair. I did all this stuff and I had the best of times. I had a lot of experiences. I got to travel the country as a result of chasing this thing, and it was like freedom, and it was I had a really bad alcohol habit throughout the whole thing, but I could support it because I had this business and stuff was good. Things were great. I mean, I like everything was okay. I got caught doing some illegal activities more than once, more than three times. Eventually, there was a judge that was like, hey, I got caught in New York City, and he's like, you either have to go to Rikers Island or you have to go to treatment. And I was like, I'll take the treatment because I'm gonna get killed in Rikers Island. That's not for me. You know, I'm tiny. So I took the treatment, which was my very first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a therapeutic community, which if you've ever been in a therapeutic community, not fun. Very strict, very weird. But they introduced us to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was the gift out of that. The other gift out of that was I was in there for 9 months, and in that 9 months, my father did pass away from cancer, and it was pretty rapid, and he did get to see me soberish, right? I was not actively drinking at the time, obviously. I wouldn't say I was on a path of spiritual experience and working the steps or anything like that, but I was soberish. And he got to see that, and I got to say goodbye to him and made the best amends that I could, and I'm grateful for that moment. One of those things that happened that when my dad passed away, I had another spiritual awakening of sorts where I realized that life is very short, very, very short, and every moment is to be just embraced and done, and just to be like an adventure, to live it well. And you'd think, having that awakening, that I would actually go do that. But instead, I got out of this therapeutic community and had all the greatest intentions of trying to live a different, or what some people would call normal, life, and I could not. I got out and immediately got drunk, and it just got worse. And in what had happened in that time that I was gone, I lost all my connections from my business, so that disintegrated. I had no means, and I had giant alcohol problem. And so that started a very intense downward spiral from the 1998 to 2000. Just plain awful. I had no money. I started stealing. I couldn't, had nowhere to live. I was I was kind of going around the country to like shows and stuff and staying on people's couches. And then like in the off season from tour, I was just trying to live wherever I could. And I got to live in some cool places, but I was stuck in this prison of alcoholism, right? Where I think I'm free, but I'm actually locked up in this need to drink all the time, every day. And so what had happened in 2000 was I, well, 1999 really, I went down for this show in Florida for New Year's, and it was an awesome show and I had a good time. It was probably one of the last good times I had while drinking. In that good time, I met a girl there, and long story short, I got her pregnant, but I didn't know that at the time. So that happened in Florida in 2000. I decided to stay in Florida because it's warm, and I was homeless, and I was like, well, I can do this. Like, I can live homeless in Florida. That's easy. So I did that, which is, that's not really homelessness. It's like beach living. So I'm not trying to seem hard like I'm a homeless dude. Like, I live in Florida homeless. I was in Florida, and I was a very different looking person at the time. I had piercings and stupid hair for a white person. just say that. I'm walking down the street, and I'm really miserable, and I'm stuck, and I didn't know what to do. And I walked by a strip mall, and this was, I had gone to a detox down there, and I ended up sort of in this area called Del Rey. If you've ever been down there, it's like recovery craziness. You're either sober or just smoking copious amounts of crack. So I'm walking down the street, and I see a recruiting Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and I'm like, you know what? Nothing's really working here. That seems like the antithesis of what I am and who I am. I'm going to join the military. So I walked into the, and I picked the Navy because the Navy just seemed the easiest and the most fun out of all those. And so I walked in, and I was like, I would like to join the Navy. And the recruiter was like, not with this, whatever you got going on here. And he's like, but we'd love to have you, just fix that. So I joined the Navy. Really awesome decision at the time. I went to MEPS, and then they sent me to the Great Lakes in Chicago, and then they sent me here. And they sent me to Norfolk. I was on a ship here. And I thought I did really well in basic. Like, I was like, when you remove stuff and the alcohol equation from my life, and I'm, you know, if I'm locked up or if I'm in a treatment center or whatever, I do pretty well. I can like follow rules and I can do all that stuff. You just let me loose and forget about it. I have no self-discipline. AA has given me discipline. We ended up in dry dock in Portsmouth, and I tried to control the drinking, and it just didn't work. And what ended up happening was that I ended up getting caught, long story short, and getting kicked out of the Navy with an other than honorable discharge, which is not ideal, but not super awful. I kind of got out easy for what I had done. And what's important about that is that when that had happened, I had that real bad moment of despair. That feeling of the four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair, just awfulness. I can't stop this. I can't get out of this. There's nothing in this world that is going to shift me. I can't live in this world. And what I made a pretty hearty suicide attempt. Fortunately, the circumstances evolved where I was able to be taken by somebody to Portsmouth Naval Hospital. I was revived. I was put into the psych ward. apparently I was super crazy in the psych ward. I was like singing Bob Dylan songs at the top of my lungs. And whatever. And what the Navy ended up coming in there and discharging me from that hospital. And that was a good enough bottom for me to call Mommy and go, Mommy, I'm in trouble. I hadn't really told her what was going on. I said, I need help. And I need it real bad. And it was like the first moment that I ever really wanted help with this thing. And she sent help in the form of my uncle, who lived in Northern Virginia, and he came and picked me up and brought me to detox, and that was in November of 2001. And I was desperate, I was homeless, I was broken, and I had the gift of desperation, and I got sober. And I got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous in a big way. I did the steps, I worked with a sponsor, I sponsored men, I took meetings in the treatment centers, I was on young people's AA convention committees, and I mean, in the middle of it. I met a girl, I got married, first time. I've done this twice. and everything was amazing. I'm going to tell you more about my journey through the steps, but I'll tell you about it later, and I'll tell you why. I started to get that cynicism that just pokes at me all the time, that tells me that what your ideas of God are crazy, because I'm fundamentally was an atheist, and I was like, all right, I can't do this really, but I'll pretend and muddle my way through Alcoholics Anonymous and let you say God, and I'll just kind of go about my merry way and just do all the other stuff and not really ever internalize that. I heard people in AA meetings talking, and I was like, oh, they're all just full of shit. And I was sick of it. I was sick of hearing it all. And I was just sitting there in my high horse of judgment and just cutting myself off from you, from God, from anything that resembled what gave me a life at all. And in that life that you guys gave me, I had great success. I found a career for someone who has zero college education, who had zero history of employment until the age of 25, like zero. I got an opportunity to get into a business. It's not like a high-class business, it's flooring, but it worked out really well for me for some reason in construction. I got all these opportunities, and I had all these great successes. I married this girl. We bought like four homes. We like traveled all over the world, all this great stuff. And I was like, I did this, you know? I forgot that I didn't do any of it. I thought that I was awesome, and I didn't need AA at all. And some stuff happened in the economy. I had all my investments tied up and housing market, which was a bad idea. And so we knew it was coming down the pike, and I hadn't been going to Alcoholics Anonymous at all from like 2005 to 2006. And then I was like, I'm going to move to Colorado because that'll make things even better than they are. Colorado doesn't fix anything. No move ever fixed anything, right? Colorado's amazing. So we moved there, me and my wife, and she got plugged into Alcoholics Anonymous. She's been sober for 21 years today. And she got plugged into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was like, I'm gonna do what I do. And I met up with some old friends, like almost immediately when I got there. They offered me to invest in a illegitimate business of sorts. Not of sorts, an illegitimate business. And so I'm sober. I'm involved in an illegitimate business. I had another job that I was doing that, but this is like what I started doing more regularly. Eventually, I just didn't go to the other job at all. And so this was in September of 2008. I thought it was a good idea to take a drink. I had no defense. All the work I had done in Alcoholics Anonymous, all the stuff that you guys had told me, I was like, well, it's been 7 years. It's gonna be different now. As people do think that. It's crazy, but if I don't stay plugged into Alcoholics Anonymous and stay in the center of this thing and do the work consistently and continually take inventory and all that stuff, I can very easily get to that place where maybe it'll work now. Maybe I can do this like normal people do. Maybe I can take a drink like I see others taking with impunity. That's insanity. But I took a drink, and nothing immediately went crazy. What did immediately happen is that the obsession to drink more kicked right in. It didn't take any time at all, but I was like, I'm gonna fight this thing. I'm gonna hunker down and fight this obsession, and I'm gonna drink once a week. And then, like, later that night, I was like, okay, twice a week. What happened was eventually it turned into, within a week's time, I am going to drink every day, but not before 5. Second week, I'm going to drink every day, only at lunch and after 5. And then it was just, it's just not going to work. I can't do this. I need to drink. And I need to drink like I drink. And I was trying to hide this from my wife. She was doing her own thing. Some stuff happened, and we decided that we should get divorced. Which is probably a really good thing. I probably saved her a lot of pain. And so we got divorced. And when all that stuff went down, that just pulled all the stops out. And I went on a 3-year run that was the most painful, awful, tragic thing that I could possibly put myself through, my family through, anybody that I knew, any relationships I had built, just destroyed all of it. And the level of insanity that I experienced on this relapse was like unlike anything I had ever experienced before. And I was like, how did this even happen? It just happened so fast, and the obsession and the delusion and all that stuff just took hold of me, and that's alcoholism. And I forgot that I had alcoholism and what actually having alcoholism means to someone like me. It's insane. Well, I was living in Crested Butte, Colorado, which is in the middle of nowhere, and I figured that would fix me because I'd at least get away from Denver. That didn't work. Because none of that works. And I decided to pack up all my stuff, and I was like, I'm going to move back to Virginia. Maybe that will work. That also didn't work. Amazingly. None of these moves worked. I'm sad to say that I didn't have, I'm not even sad to say, I didn't have a spiritual awakening of my own accord. I got arrested for my 7th felony, and I got put in jail, and I had a spiritual awakening as a result of being put in jail. The Fairfax County Police Department, Prince William Police Department, they just did it for me. You separate me from alcohol, you put me in jail for long enough, I will find God. And so I hit my knees one day in jail for the first time in a long time. And I said, if and when I do get out of here, I will go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was the only thing I said. And it was the first time I had prayed, and it was earnest. It was real. And after I said that prayer, I felt lighter. That is a spiritual awakening of sorts. I got out on January 7th of 2011. That's the date I count as my sobriety date. And I did exactly what I had said I would do. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came in and I asked this guy to sponsor me that I saw living the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in his life, practicing these steps in every aspect of his life, and passing it on to other men. And I said, show me. Show me how to do this. And he had a relationship with God, and his was a Christian God. And I was like, I don't necessarily want the Christian God, but I want a God. Show me how to get there. And I was open-minded. And I had no more contempt. I was just like, show me. And he walked me through. And so my experience, first step, my sponsor says you have to get to step 0 first, which is basically where I was in jail, right? I'm effed, right? That's step 0. I'm out of options, I'm out of choices, I'm done. And for step one, powerlessness and unmanageability, it was obvious that I was powerless. I had all that experience. My life was absolutely unmanageable. This was no longer a question, right? I guess the biggest part about how to, for me to do step one as it exists now in my life is, how do I maintain that idea every day? One of the things that I do now is I pray every morning and every night. That prayer in the morning reminds me, oh yeah, I am an alcoholic. That is my baseline. If it does nothing else for me, it reminds me that I'm an alcoholic. And that's how I go about my day. That's it. Everything else is just gravy. Everything else that's coming, all the chaos, all the stuff I manufacture, all the stuff the world manufactures, it doesn't matter. I'm an alcoholic, and I need to treat the world as with love and tolerance on every level because of who I am. And then we get to step two, which gives us this idea of insanity. And insanity, as I've come to understand it, of in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, is this idea that I think, on some level, that I will be able to drink like other people drink. That is the insanity of alcoholism for me, that I will one day control and enjoy my drinking. And that has to go away. It has to be smashed. And there is no other way I've ever known to have that idea smashed than to create, develop, perfect, and enlarge a relationship with a higher power of my understanding. And you can have whatever higher power you want. It really doesn't matter. Just have one. And so there's hope in that, because then I can actually become free of that idea. Making a decision to turn my will and my life over to God is, it's like, hey, do you trust that this process is going to work, right? And what is God's will, right? That's a question that people, I don't know what God's will is all the time, right? I'm going to tell you, for me, and this is just my experience, I know what God's will is. I am absolutely sure of what God's will is for me. It is to be of service to others. That's it. Anything else is just, you know, side stuff and whatever. God's will for me is to show up and serve you, to be part of that bigger thing. Because left to my own selfishness and my own self-seeking, I am not in God's will. That does not line up at all. And so I do a fourth step, and I do a more thorough fourth step than I've ever done in my life. And there's some stuff on there that I didn't think I could ever forgive. Stuff that was just done to me, like that I was like strictly a victim of, right? And my sponsor heard a fifth step, and that man showed me how to forgive everybody, right? Through doing six and seven, right? So starting to let some of that stuff go. And when I immediately got into six and seven, I had all these defects running through me, and I had all brought them all to the surface. And so first, I tried to like be Superman and not be defective at all, and I was going absolutely crazy. And then I went onto the other level while I was just being awful, and I was just living in defect. And I was like, "There's got to be a balance in here somewhere." And he was like, "You know, it says, you know, God is going to remove them, not you. You just have to be willing to let him go." And it was scary to let any of those defects go, because they were my survival mechanisms. They were the things that carried me through this life alive. To the age, whatever age I was at the time, 35 or whatever. And so those things are very hard to let go of, because they are what I feel makes me whole. And so what eventually started to happen was that I started to treat people with love and kindness no matter what. I started to pause when agitated. I started to like live in these ways in Alcoholics Anonymous where defect didn't have room to operate anymore. And over time, the actions started to fall away. And then over more time, the thoughts, which I never thought would go away, the defective thoughts started to slip away. I just don't have them that much. I still have them. I don't have them that much anymore, right? And this is always a work in progress. 8 and 9, I made a list, a very thorough list. I made amends to everyone. and I had some big financial amends to make. And I, all the other ones seem to be, I don't really mind like getting humble, if you want to call it that, but just going in front of somebody and saying, hey, I've done wrong, this is what I did, how can I make it right? I had one amends with the ex-wife that just didn't go well, but that's okay. Like, it doesn't have to. it's just, you know, I just made it. And I'm not doing it to do anything other than make the amends and try and set her free. Right? It's not for me. But the financial amends are really hard for me. I don't like to be separated from money. I could get away with not paying this back. I stole all these bicycles, right? And nobody knows that I stole these bicycles in Boulder, Colorado. Like, I got away with it. Well, you gotta pay it back. What? That's tough. It's not fair. Those are the hardest for me to make. And that seems crazy, because it's just money. But those are really hard. But I eventually made them all. It took some years. But I made every amends. I'm square. And that's an awesome feeling. To be square with everybody and everything on this planet. I owe no amends. That's insane. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous gave me, absolute freedom. I can look you in the eye, I don't have to be afraid. I don't have to be anything other than love. So 10, 11, and 12. This is the daily work of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm constantly in inventory. I've taken so many damn inventories this year in this, you know, so I got sober, all these things, wonderful things happen. I met another girl in AA because I can't seem to date outside of AA. That's fine, whatever. It's just what I do. I'm okay with it. I accept it at this point. It's really easy to connect with someone on a spiritual level and talk about alcoholism and be like, hey, I'm a 41-year-old man. I've been divorced. I have 7 felonies, and this is my life. Any normal person would be like, I gotta go. It ain't all that attractive. AA person's like, wow. So, here I am. So as with any alcoholic in recovery, we're not fixed. And I married this girl, and I loved her better than I've ever loved anybody in my life. I really did. I had been doing the work, and I was doing Alcoholics Anonymous principles, all this stuff. We had a really awesome marriage. She got into medical school. I supported her to get to medical school while she did all that stuff and like championed her. And I'm not unhappy about it. It's awesome. And she got into medical school down in Tennessee, and she went away to Tennessee. And in her first year there, she had an affair. And I found out about it. And it sucked real bad. And this is what I was talking about when I got to this. This happened, she left, officially left July 27th, 11 months ago, or almost 12 months ago. I don't know if you've ever had any trauma in your life. Anytime anything traumatic happens, it all comes back. And I was leveled. Because that finding out about that and the way in which I found out about it and all the information that I found out, that my sponsor was like, you don't want to know these things. And I was like, I need to know these things. And I really didn't need to know everything. But I found out. So she left, and she went back to medical school, and we started the process of divorce. And when that happened, like any good alcoholic, like I was saying earlier, this spiritual experience I was having through all this whole entire journey, I was like, I need to take the reins here. I need to fix the way I'm feeling here. And I didn't really fully comprehend. Like, and I had been doing these workshops and all this stuff with a group of men on awareness and how to actually, to try to enhance my emotional sobriety and how to understand what feelings are and how to let feelings go by like thought bubbles and be like, it's just a feeling. Experience it, live in it, feel it. You don't have to do anything with it. Just feel it. It's not bad to feel sad, just feel sad. It's not bad to feel angry, don't act. Well, I didn't do any of that. For no other reason than like, I'm just another common run-of-the-mill alcoholic who doesn't know what the hell he's doing. And I lose my way. And I fortunately have a lot of people in my life that walk me through those times when I lose my way. I am in constant contact with these people. And they're telling me all the time, come back. It's safer over here. You're not going to hurt anybody over here, because that's one of our biggest edicts within the group of people that I hang out with is do no harm. You don't get to hurt people anymore. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're living in principles, you don't get to hurt. That's not okay. And if you hurt, make it right now. And I'm manipulating to try to get fed, to try to feel okay, to try to feel like I'm lovable after all this trauma happened in my life, and to feel like because to me, the relationship is everything, right? When I'm involved in it, like, because I feel like if I'm alone, I'm toast. My life is awful, and I don't know where the hell that idea came from. It's totally a delusion, but I feel that way. I feel so strongly about it that I have to figure out a way to have that, because I'm so afraid of being alone. I'm so afraid of just being with God. And that's crazy. So I went through this process of hurting people, of manipulating to my own ends to feel okay and to feel loved. And I ran, and the 3 days after my wife left, I went to Puerto Rico. I didn't move, I just traveled to Puerto Rico with a girl on a whim. Hurt her, came back, hooked up with another, just went through the motions of being a total scumbag in Alcoholics Anonymous. Fortunately, I have grown to a point where I can't do that for very long, because it becomes too much, and I have been given too much God and too much principle, and my idea of God is love and tolerance and service and do no harm. Well, those two, that action and that idea, don't meet at all. So it has to change. And so God does it for me, which is what he did in January in that car when I just lost it. God did it for me, and it's in God's own time, not in my time. And I've been able to start healing from all of that. And my relationship with God has deepened. My understanding and effectiveness as a sponsor with other men, with all my relationships, has just grown exponentially in 6 months as a result of some of the greatest pain I've ever experienced. And so my sponsor used to say, every time the pain was coming, he would say, I get so excited when the pain's coming. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? And he says, because every time I've been faced with pain, I've grown more than I've ever grown in my life. And he and I were talking the other day, and he said, you saw me when he had just come out of a period of great pain when he started sponsoring me. And he had stood up in Alcoholics Anonymous and was like, all right, I'm gonna help everybody. And that was he was just out there just doing Alcoholics Anonymous everywhere, every night, just doing it like he had just been given the answer to life and to what happiness was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he did that. There was some residual awesomeness, right? He helped me tremendously. He helped all these guys. We watched a community of men grow around us, a real fellowship that I had been looking for all my life, right? His pain helped create that fellowship that I was looking for, that he was looking for. And he wrote it out for 4 years, and now he's like, now I'm me again, right? I'm so far removed from the pain that it's not this persistent thing in my life, but I grew to a different place. I grew to become a different man as a result of that pain and through working the steps, through this process, and to to deepening my understanding of emotional sobriety and to getting closer to God. And that is where I am currently at. And I said, how can I sustain this? How do I make this last forever? Like how, because I'm floating right now. I'll tell you folks, it's a little weird. Because everything is amazing. I had this real feeling where I love my ex-wife for doing this. That's crazy talk. I was telling my mother about it, and she said, I don't understand you at all. I said, I don't expect you would, but I love you anyway. I love you. She was like, you can't possibly be happy. How can you be happy after all this happened to you? Because, you know, mom is mom, and she doesn't like to see her son hurt. And I said, I truly am. I'm truly grateful for what she did, because it gave me this gift. Like, it gave me the pain to come to this place with the God of my understanding and to feel this way. And I love her for all that she did. I wouldn't have what I have right now if it wasn't for that. And that is life, right? Everything that I've gone through, every pain, every death, every relationship lost, every time of losing all the money, getting it all back, right? All of it has enlarged my life, made it more of an adventure, given me this gift of just life. And I don't have to look at it as, oh, my life has been hard, or whoa, blah, 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 whatever like that. It's all been this beautiful experience that none of what has happened even matters. It only matters what I do today with all of that information. And what I can do today with all of that information and all of my experience is help others. I can do God's will, and I can do it more effectively because I have more experience walking through all those things. Amazingly, when I started going through my divorce, a sponsee's wife left him. Another ex-sponsee who was living in Philadelphia, his wife had just served him divorce papers, and we were all ready to help each other because that's what we can do. And all this experience that I've been given has been given to me so I can help others. That is the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a beautiful gift. And so, I try to live in the principles as best I can. I fail all the time, and I do not beat myself up about failing. I just try to correct. Because no one's going to be perfect. No one's going to be a saint. Nobody asks us to be a saint. But all this stuff that I do, I didn't think about drinking once during this last year. Not once. That's insane for someone like me. That is, I can't explain, because that's been my go-to fix it. And Alcoholics Anonymous thankfully took that away from me as an even an option. It is not an option. It can become a reality if I stop doing what I'm doing, but it's not an option. And that's awesome. So I hope to be able to continue on this path. I really thank you guys for having me out here. I mean, I love, love, love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope I never stop. So thanks.
That was amazing. Could I ask a home group member to come up with the baskets that we're going to pass for the seventh tradition? I know not where they are. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? Nice and loud, Steve. Thanks, Steve. Anybody else? Anybody else?
I'm Vince.
Vince.
And the last full weekend in September, 22nd, 23rd, 24th, I believe, is Wakefield Campfire Conference. Cost of conference to see is $70 outside of your Red Ball meeting, Friday night, great speeches, and workshops.
Thanks, Vince. Any other announcements for the good of AA? All right. This group, the Simple Actions Group, it is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please. Thank you. And the reason we are here, really, is for you. Is there anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety? If we could just get your first name, we'd love to meet you. Anybody in their first 30 days?
Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Chris. Welcome. Awesome. Welcome. Alex. Welcome, brother. Anybody else? It feels like there's like two more. Yeah. Welcome, Michael. I'm feeling one more.
I'm Victoria.
Hey, Victoria.
Victoria, welcome. Right on. Please don't run off after the meeting. Somebody will talk to you. There's literature available over there near the door. If you can fold it, it's free. If it's a book, we sell them at cost. Just see a home group member. We'll get you taken care of there if you need a book. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be right here after this meeting. Come up and talk to me. Smokers are reminded, please use the butt can provided outside, and please stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. So let's see, Brad, would you stand up? And is Malcolm in the room? Everybody know Brad? Brad knows how to put this room back together. We're gonna need your help. We're gonna end up with like six tables over there. All the other tables get put up on carts, chairs get put away. Anybody who's interested in helping us with that, it would be appreciated. Don't drag anything across these floors. Pick stuff up, okay? And I know it's not traditional in the Tidewater area, but please feel free to thank Mike after the meeting. Go up, shake his hand, give him a hug, and can we thank him from the podium one more time, please? There's Malcolm. Shall we pray? Our Father.
Our Father.